So since this has been an upbeat morning full of song, it is, I think, my responsibility to change the mood by asking you the following question. Where do you plan to be buried? Yeah, that'll cast a pall over a conversation. Although, doesn't have to be a downbeat answer. Robert Benchley, the humorist, once was asked this, and he said, I don't care where I'm buried as long as it says on my tombstone, here lies Robert Benchley, age 104, shot by a jealous husband. But where you're going to be buried is actually a statement about who you are, what you care about, where the people you care about either are buried or are likely to come see you. And it says something about the real topic of this morning's parsha, and I would argue from a certain perspective, the real topic of life, which is your attitude towards posterity. How do you feel about what comes after you? Because it is easy to be intensely engaged in the world when you're engaged in the world. But how much you care about the world when you're gone is also a measure, maybe an even better measure, of the goodness of your life. What do you do to make sure that when you're not here, your influence for good will be felt? And it starts, or at least involves, a question as simple as where will you be buried? What legacy will you leave your children? Abraham, at the end of his life, you may know, we've just been studying it in the Torah class, he all of a sudden has all these children with Keturah, whoever she is, and I'm not going to get into that now. But he's very careful to give them a small portion of his estate and send them away. And the rabbis say that's because Abraham doesn't want any fights after he dies. Isaac gets the bulk of the estate. The other children, while he's alive, understand what they get and go away. Because, as we know, as I have experienced more times than I care to count as a rabbi, 9 times out of 10, when children fight about the estates of their parents, it's the parents' fault, not the children's. It's because the parents did not make clear while they were alive exactly what it was that they wanted and why they wanted it, and get everyone's agreement beforehand. In other words, they didn't care enough about posterity. They cared about what happened while they were alive. They didn't want to hurt someone. They didn't want to face a conflict. They didn't want to go through the work. They didn't really care what happened after they died. And so they leave to posterity the mess that Abraham was sure not to leave to Yitzchak, to Isaac. I bring this up because what does Yaakov say? He says, look, after I die, bring me to Israel, because that's where I belong. That's where Leah is buried. That's where the first piece of land that the Jewish people have owned in the land of Israel will be Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and that's where I want to be buried. And in fact, not only does he tell Joseph to do it, but after Joseph agrees, then he makes him swear. He's very clear about it. One of the commentators says that's because if he makes Joseph swear, then Joseph can go to Pharaoh and say, look, I didn't just agree, I swore. You have to let me do it. In other words, even in making Joseph swear, he was protecting Joseph. He was looking out for posterity. Yosef does something that I think is even more admirable in a way. He's really thinking about posterity and not only his children. He tells the Jewish people, I'm going to be buried in Egypt. When God remembers you, pakod yifkod, when God takes note of you, then I want you to find my coffin and bring it with you back to the land of Israel. Which means what? Joseph wants to be buried in Israel. But he knows that he will be important as a reminder to the Jewish people. And so he will forego that honor for now until the unseen future when the Jewish people will recover his coffin and bring it to Israel. And that's what happens. It's a remarkable story. While all of Israel is about to leave Egypt, and what are they doing? They're going around collecting money. They're taking from the Egyptians what are effectively the wages of slavery. What is Moshe doing? He's looking for the coffin of Joseph. And if you want to know where posterity lies, where does this engine for caring about the future come from? Then I'll tell you where, according to the tradition, Moses manages to find the coffin of Joseph. In the memory of Serach bat Asher. It is a woman, Serach bat Asher, who's mentioned as those who go down to Egypt, and remarkably in the book of Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, is then mentioned later as those who've come up from Egypt. And so our tradition says this one woman for hundreds of years carried within her the memory of the Jewish people from Egypt, and when Moshe needed to know where is the coffin of Joseph, he went to Serach bat Asher. And she found it for him. And then he carries it across the desert. And how does it help preserve the spirit of the people? Because the rabbis tell us the two were carried side by side. Remember what Joseph's coffin is called, an Aron. The last two words of the book of Genesis are Aron b'Mitzrayim, which we translate as a coffin in Egypt, but we all know another meaning of Aron, Aron HaKodesh. And when people looked at the two almost identical boxes next to each other and said, what's in them? The rabbis say that the children of Israel would answer, the person who lies in this fulfilled the message that lies in that. So in other words, Joseph cared enough about posterity for want to travel with the Israelites hundreds of years from the date of his death to remind them where they came from, who they were, and what it was they had to cherish. And he managed to do it because the memory of the woman who survived the slavery in Egypt, Serach bat Asher, ensured that the memory of Joseph would survive. So now I want to combine those two ideas. The idea that it is, in fact, women who guard the posterity of the people, because after all, when you train a child, you generally don't get your name anywhere in a plaque, in a memorial, in a monument. What you get is posterity. And the idea that every decision you make about what will happen after you die, even where you will be buried, affects those who come after you and those who come after that. All of these come together in a beautiful story about Max Nordau. Max Nordau, as you may know, was one of the four or five most important Zionist leaders of early Zionism. And like some other Zionist leaders, he started off completely uninterested in Judaism and the Jewish people. He was a physician. He was a doctor. And one day, at the Zionist conference, long after he had become one of the leaders of Zionism, he got up and he told the following legend. The story of how Rachel, the mother of Joseph, dies on the roadside and is buried on the road. And then later in Jeremiah, in Yirmiyahu, we read, Rachel mevakeh al baneha, Rachel weeps for her children, which means that every time the Jews would go into exile, they would pass by Kever Rachel, and she would cry for them and pray for their return. In other words, where she was buried and posterity. And after he gave this speech, a man named Yehuda, who later wrote his memoirs and told this story, came up to Nordau and said to him, essentially, where'd you learn the Midrash? How do you know that? And Nordau told him this story. He said, you know, when I was a physician, one day I was treating a little yeshiva bacher who was studying in a local yeshiva. And when I was done, he didn't have any money to pay me, so I said, you know what, instead of paying me, tell me what you're studying. And he told me the legend of Rachel. And the story that every time the Jews go into exile, Rachel cries for us. And when we return, she celebrates. And Nordahl said, when he was done, I had tears in my eyes. And I thought, my God, any people that preserves this memory for thousands of years will return. And since it was at the time of the Dreyfus trial, and I saw that the world didn't want us, I knew the only answer was a return to the land of Israel. So you see, it really does matter in ways that you can't know. Not only what you do while you're alive, but what you decide to do when you are no longer here. The legacy you will leave to those who come after you, and to those who come after that, and to those who come after that, since, after all, it is more than 2,000 years, it's closer to three, that separates Rachel Imenu, Rachel, our mother, from Dr. Max Nordahl. And yet, had she not been buried by the side of the road to keep watch over the Jewish people, he would not have been at the Zionist Congresses and been a leader in the creation of the State of Israel. The portion this morning is called Vayechi, which means, and he lived. And of course, it's about how he died. But the two are not separated from one another. How you die and what you want after you die is a reflection of how you lived. I know that on a brilliant and beautiful and crisp Saturday morning, it seems a ridiculous thing to start thinking about how we will be buried. But it's not a ridiculous thing to think about how we wish to be remembered and the legacy we want to leave. Because Jacob, Joseph, Leah, and Rachel, on this morning, in this Parsha, leave a legacy that enables us to move to the book of Shemot and turn from a family to a people. And thousands of years later, from a people to a country with a people. And all of that is because they understood that it's not only what you do while you are alive that changes people's lives, but what you do when you are no longer here. Rachel mevaka al baneha. She still weeps for us. She still remembers us. And so we, in fidelity to that, still remember her. Shabbat shalom.